Welcome to this Words of Life radio broadcast coming to you from the auditorium of Arlington Baptist Church in Bryson City, North Carolina. Before Pastor Spencer comes with today's message, let me invite you to worship with Arlington Baptist Church. They're located on Hughes Branch Road in Bryson City. Just turn onto Hughes Branch Road at the Ingle Store on Route 19 and go half a mile. The church will be on your right. Join them for Sunday school at 10 a.m. and the morning worship service at 11. Now let's join Dr. Spencer for today's message from God's Word.
What is it? Alaskan bull moose. But they have these huge antlers and they grow them. Of course, there's a purpose for these. These antlers are his weapons when it comes fall and the breeding season comes. And he's going to be fighting for mating rights and all of this. And so they spend the entire summer just gorging themselves, building up all the protein and all that they have to have to grow these huge antlers, and building up the muscle bulk, you see. Now, almost always the moose that has the greater weight and bulk and antlers almost always wins these battles that come in the fall in the mating season. So you understand then that the reality is the battle in the fall is won over the summer. And so here we are, there's a war coming, a battle coming, but they have to be preparing months ahead, or they will guarantee they cannot win that battle in the fall. Victory or defeat in our lives will be determined on how we prepare for the battle that we face. And whether you face that battle yet or not, you're going to it sometime. There is an unseen war that we fight, and it's a war that most people, most Christians, by the way, are completely unaware of. They don't even realize this battle's going on, and so it is a secret war, and we're going to talk about that this morning. Daniel chapter 10 and 11 and 12. No, we're not going to get through all three chapters, but I'm giving you a background and a setting for it. These last three chapters of Daniel, they're three parts of the same thing. Chapter 10 is a prelude to the vision that Daniel's going to have. Chapter 11 is the vision. Chapter 12 is kind of the postscript to that vision, you see. So, following the defeat of Babylon, the Medo-Persian Empire came in, they defeated Babylon. The 70 years of captivity in Babylon for Israel was finished. And the more spiritually minded of the Jews, Cyrus allowed the people to return. Anybody who wanted to go back to Israel was allowed to go. And Cyrus was gracious in that. But few were old enough to have remembered their homeland. They'd been there 70 years, you see. The captivity had been 70 years. Many were too old to travel. I think Daniel was in that category. Daniel was about 90 years old when this was taking place, maybe a little more. And so they were too old. He was too old to travel. Others were in the same boat. Some had stayed in Babylon even after they were told they could go back, because they had built family there. They had all kinds of family. 70 years later, well, many of these people did not go back to Jerusalem because they developed family. They developed a whole life there in Babylon. But the more spiritually minded did go back. And they had about 50,000 who returned to Israel and to Jerusalem. Now, 50,000 was a mere pittance compared to how many were shipped out when Babylon conquered Israel. How many others from northern Israel were shipped out by the Assyrians when they conquered 200 years before that, you see. So, The number of those returning to Israel was relatively small compared to those that had been shipped out. Try to imagine now with me the scene. Daniel is probably 90 or between 90 and 95 years old. Caravans there, and all the children running around that Daniel has seen born, and friends and loved ones and others that that he has known over the years. He goes up to Zerubbabel, who, by the way, was related to him, and gives Zerubbabel a hug. And he knows that when he gets with in that caravan and they start down the road and go out of sight, he's probably never going to see his dear loved one Zerubbabel again. They didn't do like we can do. We just traveled 10 hours last night to get home from seeing relatives. That's not going to happen with Daniel. He also gives Joshua a hug. Not the Joshua of Jericho. This was Joshua, the rightful high priest of Israel. But they had no high priest serving when they were in Babylon, you see. And so Daniel's hugging and saying goodbye to these folks. And he seeing friends and loved ones going where he would love to be able to go, but he's just too old to make that kind of journey. So he stands there and watches them go. In Daniel chapter 10, verse 1, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar, and the thing was true, but the time appointed was long, and he understood the thing and had understanding of the vision, you see. So what is happening at this point? Cyrus lets them return to Jerusalem. Daniel realizes that the 70 years of captivity, it's over according to the scriptures, you see. There's been no sacrifice for 70 years. There's been no worship in the temple for 70 years. And now God has fulfilled his promise by letting them go back to Jerusalem, you see. This is what Daniel is praying about back in chapter 9 of Daniel. They're returning and they still face great opposition back there in Jerusalem. Daniel knows this. Daniel knows there are enemies all around Jerusalem who don't ever want the walls built. They don't ever want the temple to go back up. And I'm telling you, folks, we're facing enemies today. And we're seeing more and more pressure put on churches. Christian faith is receiving much pressure. Daniel knew that was going to happen. And in all of this time, there have been about, after they've gone back, now there's been about 16 years where nothing has been done. Nothing has happened. The walls aren't being built. The temple's not going back. Daniel chapter 10, verse 2 and 3. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 weeks. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all, till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. Now let me just explain something about this practice of fasting. Fasting is not necessarily a prescribed practice in Scripture. We do see it happen. And fasting is not done as a kind of a sacrifice to God. Fasting is not done as a way to try to force God to do something. Fasting is not to demonstrate my sincerity or my burden, you see. Biblical fasting is the result of having a burden so great that eating becomes an afterthought. Daniel's burden was so great that he had no desire for food or drink. So intense was his praying that he took no thought of eating or drinking, you see. His passion for Israel outweighed anything that took care of his body, you see. Then try to imagine all these 16 years that have gone on, and Israel is not seeing Jerusalem rebuilt. So I can just imagine Israel, the people back there, some of them could care less that it ever got built. So why are they bothering? Others mocked. And then there were the godly Jews who would, in burdened prayer, would pray, God, give us someone who can help us build these walls back, you see. The mocking that came, the trying times that came, just imagine what they faced, you see. Daniel now prays for 3 solid weeks. He's burdened. He's not eating. He's not drinking properly. He's He's under such a burden. He's just pouring his heart out to God. And God sends an angel. This angel comes for one purpose, to tell Daniel something. And in verse 7, I want you to notice what the angel tells Daniel. And Daniel says, Daniel alone saw the vision. For the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Now, notice that the men didn't see what was going on, but they felt it. They knew something was happening, and it was enough that it frightened them. Daniel wasn't frightened. He knew that God was working, you see. Verse 12. Then said he, the angel, spoke to Daniel, "Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I come for thy words." Don't you think about that? 3 weeks Daniel's been praying day and night, a burdened heart, a broken heart. Can't eat right, can't sleep because of the burden that's on his heart. And the angel comes and says, by the way, Daniel, we heard the first moment you prayed. And by the way, God hears the first time you pray. Now you say, well, why does he allow these things to happen? I don't always know. I don't fully understand. I do know this, that every time you raise your voice in prayer, while God hears and God will answer, over here is the devil and his forces who are going to do everything they can to hinder your prayers. They're going to discourage you. They're going to interfere. If they can bring somebody into your life that's going to distract you from praying, if he can bring bitterness into your life, he can do anything he can to keep you from properly praying. And over here, God's going to say, hey, I've already heard your prayer, and I'm going to take care of it in my way. In my time. Here we begin to see the secret warfare that every believer fights. There were 3 weeks delay in receiving the answer. God heard Daniel's prayer that first day in verse 13. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 120 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. Who is this prince that seems capable of trying to hinder God's answers to prayer? Well, we conclude that he's not simply an earthly prince. The word prince here means a leader, a strong leader. He may not be a specific earthly king. But he was certainly an entity or a spiritual power. Frank Peretti wrote two books that I'm familiar with. I read them both. This Present Darkness and Piercing the Darkness. In that book, he tells of a pastor and a reporter who begin to investigate some strange things. And as the story progresses, you see both the spiritual battle that we do not see and the physical battle that we are involved in and we do see. Now, what we learn as we go through that book, and I think it's a very interesting novel. It is a novel, but it's a very interesting way he's laid it out and shows us some biblical truth. We find that the spiritual world and the activities of the spiritual world have direct impact on what's going on in our physical world. In other words, you have difficulties and heartaches and opposition and so on. Believers are persecuted, the ridicule, mocked sometimes, and you see this in the flesh, you see this in your life. What you don't understand many times is about the secret war that's going on over here, where God is trying to work, and God is, and angels are helping us, messengers from God, helping us. Satan and his emissaries are trying to hinder everything we do and trying to block our prayer life, all of those things, you see. So this secret war has an impact on what's going on in our physical lives, you see. The spiritual often moves the physical. And that spiritual world, and in that spiritual world, we know this in the physical world, we know that there are those who have a very godless agenda in our physical world. Well, what many Christians do not even think about or realize is that over here in this spiritual world, there are spiritual beings who have a godless agenda. There are two biblical principles for us to keep in mind, that as we see this secret war going on. One, you have to equip yourself against the spiritual forces that are behind the opposition to your Christian life and the gospel. There's a Dutch reformer, or prime minister, reformed theologian. He was the author of a great church history book. His name was Abraham Kuyper. And he once commented this, and I found it very interesting that he had this insight. If once the curtains were pulled back and the spiritual world behind it came to view, it would expose to our spiritual vision a struggle so intense, so convulsive, sweeping everything within its range, that the fiercest battle ever fought on earth would seem by comparison a mere game. Not here, but up there, he said. That is where the real contest is waged. Our earthly struggle drones on in the backlash of the spiritual secret war that's going on. You remember I said at the beginning that this bull moose is going to fight for mating rights and dominance in the fall. But he's going to win or lose based not upon what he does right there, but on how he has prepared back here. He's already fought the secret war. Now, then he fights the visible war, you see. There's a secret war going on. Your life is and your victory or your defeat is going to be determined by this secret battle that you fight, you see. Daniel's choice of weapons in that secret battle was prayer. Always prayer. I remember the story of a Jewish family that when the Nazis were overrunning Poland, they were Jewish, but they were Christian. And grandma and mom and dad, all of them, they gathered up all the children, got what they could carry in a cart, and they started moving ahead of the German army. But they couldn't move fast enough. The German army was moving like blitzkrieg through Poland. And so they got as far as they could and realized they're going to be overtaken. So, and you know what would happen to a Jewish Christian family? They would have all been dead. So they saw a cave. They slipped into that cave. They got as far back in the dark part of the cave as they could possibly get. But they knew when the morning light came, Germans were going to investigate. So Grandma gathered all around her. They got on their knees and began to pray. And Grandma prayed. And after who knows how long they prayed, the children fell asleep. Everything was quiet. Through the night, they could hear the troops marching by, the rumble of tanks going by, all of this. Come morning, the light began to shine, and she could hear, Grandma could hear the troops out there. And a soldier came to the entrance of the cave, and he looked in, walked in a few feet, and over the face of the whole cave was a huge spider web. He left the cave, told his CO, he said, nobody's been in there for quite some time. You see, God can take a spider and defeat an army. They fought a secret war that night, and their weapon was prayer. I fear we do not evaluate, we do not value the power of our ultimate weapon, and that's prayer, folks. Prayer. I want you to listen to these two verses from the book of Psalms. Psalm 107. I've read every verse in the Bible at some point, but sometimes a verse, after you've read it 1,000 times, it just leaps out of you. I want you to notice this and see if this has been your experience somewhere in your lifetime. Psalm 107, verse 27. They reel to and fro and stagger like a drunk man and are at times at their wits' end. Then they cry unto the Lord in their trouble, and He bringeth them out of their distress. You ever been at your wits' end? You ever felt like you were staggering like a drunk man? Felt like you reeled to and fro and you cry out to God. I've had times when I had to get in my car and just go drive, and I'd have to pull over because the tears were filling my eyes, and I couldn't see, and it got dangerous. So I'd pull over, and I wouldn't even know how to pray. I'd say, Lord, I don't even know what to ask for, but I need help. And there'd be different things, a problem here, there, or maybe even finances. But I cried out to God. I read this verse and I think, oh, God, I've been there. I've been there. Stagger like a drunk man. Reel to and fro at the wit's end. And then I cry out to God. And he bringeth them out of their distress. You see, what does this mean for us today? It means when the gospel is opposed by earthly forces. It means when we labor and we don't seem to see the results that our heart desires. When we preach and teach and we don't see lives changed. You invite folks and you encourage folks to come and you don't seem to be able to get them to come. And you live for Jesus and somebody criticizes you. Family says, what are you, you're too good to be around us? Are you too righteous? You think you're better than we are? Criticize you. Why? Because you're trying to live for Jesus. It means that we realize that all this opposition and all of these problems and all of these issues are the physical manifestation of a secret war that's going on here, spiritually. All the world's wars, all the politicians, all the political parties, all the conservatives and liberals, and all the capitals in the world, and the problem's not there. The problem is being battled in this secret war, you see. Second principle. Yes, prayer is our ultimate weapon. The prayer has to become a completely pervasive part of our lives. Excuse me, pervasive in every single part of our spiritual warfare. Daniel knew the importance of prayer. His life was on the line many times. He's a young man. He's been taken to Babylon. They sit him down and say, you're going to eat the king's meat and drink the king's wine, and we're going to build you up physically, and you're going to be advisors and helpers in running this kingdom. And Daniel says, I can't do that. My God's told me to eat these things and to live this way. And when you refuse to do what the king of Babylon ordered, the next step would be you could lose your head over that. Daniel knew what he was doing. He said, no, test us. And of course, you know the story. Daniel faced it again when Nebuchadnezzar's advisors couldn't help him with his dream. And Daniel went to him and said, let me pray about it overnight. You see, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were all part of the king's advisors. The king was angry. He said, I'm going to kill them all. If you can't help me with this dream, what good are you? I'm just going to kill them all. And so Daniel said, well, no, wait a minute. Let me pray about this. And of course, he interprets the dream, you see. But again, Daniel's life was on the line. And he and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego got together and had a prayer meeting. And let me tell you something. When your life's on the line, you have no problem with sincere praying. It is not casual praying. Oh, and time again, then Daniel practices for his life and does this all his life. And then one day they come to him and say, you don't seem to understand. The king, Darius, has ordered that nobody prays to anybody but him. Daniel said, sorry, I keep praying toward Jerusalem and I pray to Jehovah God. And so they put him in a lion's den. And Daniel still did what he'd always done. He kept praying. God gave him peace. Daniel laid down and slept a good night. Probably had a lion for a pillow. Darius, on the other hand, paced the floor all night, you see. Time and again, Daniel faced this kind of crisis in his life. And every single time, his ultimate weapon was prayer. Prayed to God. You may recall in Ephesians chapter 6, Paul describes the pieces of spiritual armor and weapons, and he doesn't name prayer in that. Now, why doesn't he name prayer? If prayer is so important, why does Paul not mention that? Well, because you see, prayer had to be woven into every fiber of that uniform. It had to be woven right into the very armor itself. Prayer was to be the to be infused in the power of all the weapons. You see, the sword. That's what strengthened the sword. Prayer was to be present in him, like breathing is in us, folks. John Stott put it this way: equipping ourselves with God's armor is not a mechanical operation. It's an expression of our dependence on God. In other words, it is simply prayer. We cry out to God. So you have to realize that all this that opposes you in your Christian life is ultimately part of this secret war that's going on. The devil fights this secret war using our flesh. He pressures us to give in to our desires. He presses us to surrender to our anger sometimes and our frustration or bitterness. He pushes us to become discouraged. And he presses us to react to people's offenses. Somebody offended you, so I'm going to get angry about it. No. The devil fights this secret prayer by using the actions of others, you see. He makes some a stumbling block, knowing that some Christians will fall over something somebody says or does to them. We have to recognize now that our ultimate weapon and most effective weapon in this secret war will always be the matter of prayer. Any type of warfare, we have to employ superior weapons, you see. New programs in the church, some programs are wonderful, but they're organizational issues, you see. Winning the secret war doesn't have anything to do with organization. Winning the secret war doesn't result. We don't win that because we work harder. We don't win this secret war because we have better methods. No, the secret war is won or lost. And what happens here in our lives physically is won or lost with the ultimate weapon.
Thank you for joining us for the Words of Life broadcast. You may have questions about God's Word or your Christian life. Pastor Spencer would love to have the opportunity to answer your questions. You may send your questions by email to lspencer1146@gmail.com. Again, that's lspencer1146@gmail.com. Until next week at this same time, may God bless you.